You're listening to TCRG to CEO Radio with your host, Courtney J. TCRG.
All right, so today we have Nicole McKeever, who is a TCRG, ADCRG, and alumni of the University of Limerick, like myself. So welcome, Nicole.
Hi, so good to talk to you today.
Yeah, Nicole and I have not actually met yet. This is our first time sitting down to talk, and she's always been someone that I've been really eager to talk to, because as we were just talking before the recording went on, that there aren't that many of us that have gone over to Limerick and come back and are doing what we're doing. So it's always nice to have that shared experience. For anyone that doesn't know you, can you give us a little brief overview on, you know, who you are, how you got into Irish dancing, and what your like early career has looked like?
Sure. So I always like to tell my story because I started at a late age, around 12, and I'd always wanted to do Irish dance, but it just wasn't accessible. I moved around a lot as a kid, and there were just a lot of roadblocks until I got to that age. And just around that same time, Riverdance came out, and we found it at Blockbuster on a VHS. And it was just like, okay, I've always wanted to do this. And I just was in love with Riverdance. And I was 12. So in my head, I thought, hey, you know what? In 2 years, I'll be a world champion. I'll be this and that. I just had like no clue of the path that it would take. And at that time, a lot of people would tell me like, oh, you should have started at five if you want to have those kind of dreams, you know. But I just worked really hard. I had good teachers. I grew up in New Jersey with the Denoga School. And they were young sisters teaching, kind of like what I'm doing with my sister now. Got up the ranks, did well in competition. And by 19, you know, I was third in the region and 20th in the worlds. That was like a big one for me, my first worlds. And so I hit this like, it was just going up, 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 up with all my hard work. It was paying off. And then I ended up breaking my foot when I was like in college. And that just kind of changed everything for me. Just wasn't taking care of myself and was kind of just, back in the day, a lot of the mentality of practice was like, if you want to be good, do your hornpipe five times in a row. And it's like box checked. Okay, I put in the hard work, but it wasn't making me a better dancer. And there was just a point where the injury and other things were getting in my way. So college, I did okay in Irish dance, but I could see the end of the road coming. And it was just so depressing because there wasn't really a large amount of older girls dancing in like the early 2000s. It was like, okay, you're in college, you're done.
Right.
And so it just was like, I'm not done. I didn't feel like I knew enough. I didn't feel like I could coach myself and become a good dancer. So how could I become a good teacher? It was just like, I didn't know enough. And so I came home from one of the world championships, and I just was like so depressed. And my mom was like, why don't you go to that program in Limerick that we heard one of the dancers, Kieran Jordan, went there, and she's a Shawnos dancer. And I was like, oh my God, this is my ticket. This is what I'm gonna learn. And I didn't even think I'd get in the program. That's how low of a self-esteem I had, which was ridiculous. So it's just like, I got over there, I got in, and the rest was history. It's just such a wonderful program because you're just learning from all of your, you know, it's like Colin Dunn is your teacher.
Yeah, like your idols, basically.
Yeah, it's like Brendan Degali and like Michael Ryan and just like, what the heck? And
yeah,
it's so wonderful. And I learned so much, and I competed with Michael Ryan for 2 years. I taught over there. And then I got scouted for Riverdance. And then I toured with that company for 5 years. So it was a total of like 7 years being away from home and being a professional from like age 23 to 30. And I can talk more about that later, but that's a whole thing in itself. But again, something that like you're working towards, but you have, your brain has not caught up to what your abilities are. And, you know, it's just like, what? I'm on stage doing this, you know?
Yeah. What a full circle moment. Cause you went from being like the Riverdance baby that we all, you know, talk about, that whole generation of people that started dancing because they saw Riverdance. I'm that same age, but didn't see Riverdance before I started. So I'm like technically the right age, but I didn't get in for that reason. Uh-huh. And then I can only imagine how surreal that would be to then find yourself on stage. You know, Nicole and I have our cameras on, but for the listeners at home, Nicole has a Bowron on her wall that's signed with all of the cast, I assume, for one of your tours.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny you saw that. And obviously I knew it was there, but I kind of forgot. I bought that at like a random Irish catalog sale in like probably like 1998. So I had it on my wall all through my childhood. And then my first tour, I brought it backstage and everybody signed it for me.
Oh, like, that's even better. That's amazing. Yeah. Wow. Okay. So you mentioned running your school now with your sister. Now, if anyone doesn't know, Nicole teaches out of California. Mm-hmm. And was your relationship with your sister, like, how, what was that like growing up in dance?
We started at the same time and she was just a beautiful dancer in her own right, but she stopped dancing at, around 17 or 18. And then, when I moved out here, I was like, hey, you know, come on to my classes, just have fun. So she started getting back into it just for fitness and fun. And then it was like my school was doubling in size because we moved to this new location. And I was like, you know what, I need an assistant. And so we slowly got her through all the grade exams and she just passed her TC. And
oh, congrats.
Yeah, she got into open in her 30s. So like she has her own story of determination and it helps inspire the kids in a whole other way in our school. You know, it's like there are no limits to what your dreams are. And so it's just pivotal to have her as part of my school.
Oh, that's so amazing. I love that. I mean, I love my sister, but I can never imagine running my studio with her. So that's amazing that you guys have that relationship. At what point did you get your TCRG in your kind of timeline?
Yeah. So I think I can't even really remember the dates, but it was midway through Riverdance. Everyone was taking the test and I jumped in and was like, okay, I'm doing it. And I failed the Kaylee teaching part. So it's like, you know, if you talk to any teacher, if you're going down that path, please do not take any failures as like a no, because literally the best dancers in the world I know have, like, even world champions I know have gotten low scores on their own dancing. So it's just like, it's a hard test.
Absolutely.
And so I failed that. And then it took me a couple of years to just get my, again, you just kind of get so like demoralized. You're like, I'll never do this. And so I took a little break. And then I think it was 2012, I passed it. And at that point I was turning 30. I was like, I've seen a lot with Riverdance and I'm tired and this has been awesome and I want to do the next thing.
Yeah.
So that was when I just like, oh, pack up and go to California and just start a class. I didn't really imagine a giant thing, even though that's a dream, but it's just starts with a class and one student and it grows from there.
Yeah. Did you have a connection to California already or did you pick that specifically for opening your studio?
Yeah. So my family, like my mom's side's been there for five generations and my dad grew up here at some point in his life too. So all my cousins, aunts, uncles, grandparents were out here and my sister was going to school out here. So it was just like, I just did not see a point in starting a school in New Jersey. There's just so many big, awesome schools and it just wasn't the life I wanted. So
yeah,
I picked a smaller town that had a good quality of life and I knew that there wasn't really too many schools around me. I wouldn't be, you know, stepping on shoes and I could just build something.
Awesome. Yeah. It sounds like from your, you know, pretty early on in your own dance career, it sounds like you kind of had the desire to teach. So
yeah.
It must be really fulfilling to, I guess, see it come to life. And I have a similar feeling with my studio. I'd love to hear more about your experience at the University of Limerick. I mean, I think you touched on a lot of the really, really great things about the program, just that there's such excellent teaching staff. I know something I always really appreciated there is that they utilize whoever they have at the moment. So if someone's there doing their PhD in African dance, like you'll work with them on little masterclasses and like be exposed to things that you wouldn't normally be exposed to. And I spoke a lot in last week's episode about choreography, about how influential Brendon was in learning how to teach choreography and like his really strong vision. And I would love to hear, I guess, some of your like most favorite experiences, or if someone's thinking about going there, like what advice you'd have for them, or really anything you want to talk about with that program.
Yeah, there's just so much. I agree with you. It's just like, it's, you just have to explore that whole, I guess the thing that I loved about it was my undergrad was in art. And so there was an aspect to, I think I like breaking rules, and I like kind of like in art, you get to break rules and you get to like take something, build off of it, or like there's little projects and challenges and you can delve deep into concepts. And with competition, it's more pigeonholed and kind of A plus B equals C and hit this mark. And it's very, in some ways like mathematical. There's obviously artistic expression, and when you get to the top, that kind of stuff. But I liked the fact that I could just kind of be myself and to have a voice and like experiment, and they encourage that. And I even liked the aspect of like writing about dance and like, yeah, learning new things. And you're literally in the studio like from 8 till 5 some days, and you're just like, you're so exhausted. But when you're that young, that's like what you live and breathe for. Like,
right. Oh, and you are fully immersed in it.
Yeah. You're like, wait, I got to dance all day. This is awesome. And then you get to sit around and listen to Irish music at the university. There's like always fun things going on. And
yeah, people just jamming in the corner.
Yeah, it was amazing. And then we would like some of my friends, there was a dancer, Andre from Slovakia, and Gretchen, who's from New York. And we would get on the bus or get in the car and go down to Tipperary and go do Irish dance classes with Michael Ryan. And that was also surreal because you're in this old church hall with like no heating. You're literally in the middle of Tipperary and you're like, I'm in an actual Irish dance class. This is like so cool.
Yeah. And I know it's starting to change over there. Like, you know, schools are starting to get studios, but like when I was there, it really did feel so different. Like that teachers really taught for the love of dance, and not that we don't, but like in America, it is a business. And like at the end of the day, it's your livelihood, and it's just a little different. And like the cozy church hall settings or the basements or the school halls, just, it's so different. I remember walking into my first time teaching with my teacher over there, Linda Balhoven, and seeing like 30 kids lined up. And I was so overwhelmed, like, oh my gosh, how are we doing this? And they'd all be dancing their little easy reel at the same time. And it's like, just thinking back, it was incredible. I'm sure that informs some of your teaching now too.
Big time. Like it just was another language. Like I know all those teachers, like the Balls Academy. Ball Academy, or is it Ball School? I forget.
Linda's is the Fleming Ball Academy.
Fleming Ball, yeah. All those Munster teachers, it's like I got to see just like they do love dance from the bottom of their heart, and they just want to teach their kid how to know how to do it correctly, and in a way like would inform them to pass an audition. Like it's not just hitting the mark to win the next competition. You have all the skills you need to like. And it really did get me to that point where I had the tools to get into Riverdance. I don't think I could have done it without the university or without Michael Ryan, just because I needed more information. I needed like a different level of physical training and everything, you know?
Yeah. And it's interesting that you said that your favorite part of the program was like being able to break the rules. And I'm such a rule follower. That was one of the hardest parts for me of like letting go of that rigid, like competitive structure and like letting myself explore and create. And it was a huge challenge for me, but it's like one of those things that got me outside of my comfort zone. And ultimately, like you said, like the desire to know more and experience more and explore was just so valuable.
Because it does help us as teachers. Then we have that other tool. We can think a little differently, or like, it helped me a lot, even that mindset of like, you know, when I'm teaching, it's like, okay, maybe today I didn't get this student to this mark in competition, because it can't control that.
Right.
But am I giving them like tools that they could become a choreographer? And is this adding value? Is this bringing joy? And I think art always, in my opinion, kind of can deliver that because it's more individualized rather than just hitting a mark, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. There's more to it than just a score or even learning a step sometimes. It's the whole process.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Cool. And what was your Riverdance experience like? Because I mean, I would imagine it was still pretty much at its height of popularity, kind of on that, not initial run, but like the next generation, so to speak.
Yeah, I always think it just was so perfect that I ended up in the generation of Riverdancers that I did. So I toured from about 2008 to 2013. And a lot of the dancers when I started the show had been, you know, they were that Broadway generation. Like some of them were like retiring and that I was like, wait, you guys are the guys that signed my program when I went to Radio City Music Hall. Like, this is nuts. And so in some ways, it's like I didn't hit that era, which was high pressure, I'm sure, when it's at the peak, you know?
Yeah.
It was still high pressure, but I'm glad I missed the era of like, no, there weren't iPhones. Like I didn't have to, I could just be in the show and do the show and have my experience, be with my friends backstage. I didn't have to like kind of create an identity for myself online.
Right, or like promote a certain image.
Yeah. And it's like, I think that worked for me. I know that that's probably an exciting thing for a lot of dancers now, and they're used to that. But I think I got out when it served me just because I am from another generation. I don't want to post everything online, really.
Yeah.
I want my privacy. So it was nice to just, be in it with just such a nice group. And I got to tour. I did America a few times, and we would do like 6 to 9 month tours, sometimes on a bus where you're in a new city every day. We did like the circumference of the earth in 1 6-month tour on a bus, which is
wow.
Like 26 or 7,000 miles. And then I did Europe for about 9 months, and that was awesome. We did China, we did South America. And China was my last tour, and I think we did like 14 weeks, 10 or 14 weeks, and just so many cities. And it just, it's such an awesome thing. It's like, if you want to be in Riverdance, just go for it. Like, don't let anyone say you can't be in a show, but you do need to know the standards. So it's like, study what is the standard. And, you know, I always just would like go, okay, I need to look like this dancer. I need to have these lines. I need to have this posture. I need to be able to do these trebles just like this. And then I just lived and breathed it. And when you do the audition, you have to have the right attitude as well. It's like, you know, have your body ready to go and be able to push through. And, you know, in my day, it's like, yeah, you're on the side getting drilled, and then you're up on stage doing it. So get ready to have tired legs, like,
yep.
Complain. It's just like, push through it.
Did you have any favorite places or cities along the tour?
I actually, like, people ask this and I can never decide. I liked some of the small random towns that when I would just, you know, have no idea what it would be, like, you know, a little medieval city in Germany or like this remote city in China. And you're like, I would never be able to get here on my own dollar. Like, this is never, I'm never going to be back here again. I need to soak this up. It's like, just all those moments where you're like, this is amazing. Where on the earth am I right now? Because it's just like a whirlwind, right?
Yeah, and it's probably like, you know, when you sit back and you're like, wow, I'm actually living my childhood dream right now.
It's just, and the traveling, like being paid to travel is just, I did not take one day for granted. And I took a lot of photos and stuff to kind of make sure I remembered. Otherwise, I wouldn't remember where I went. And but like, even just like a week in Paris, like, and walking around with my friends and seeing museums, like just the simple stuff, you know.
Amazing. And it sounds like a lot of the people you were on tour with kind of went through the TCRG at the same time and now have either started teaching on their own or with other people around the same time, which I'm sure is a really good community to lean on.
Yeah, it's just, it's so real that like, yeah, Irish dance friends are the best friends. Like there's just some kind of like bond in your soul when you've all grown up doing the same thing and you're up on stage and you're, I don't know, there's some, you just bond with those people, even if you've only toured with them for a few weeks. I'm sure a lot of people kind of can understand that, where you, maybe you went to a camp with people and yeah, you only knew them like a week or two, but you become friends. So in such a deep way, like I don't talk to people for months and then it's all of a sudden I see them and it's like as if they were a cousin, you know, it's like,
yeah, like you've never missed a day with them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I know it's hard to put into words, but so many people say that. And I feel like that too, just the connections that we make either yeah. along the way, or like some of those old friends that we started dancing with all those years ago that are still in our lives.
You know, and don't you feel like when you're a teacher, it's so cool to see that happen in your own studio? Like that's where.
Yes, that is, I think my favorite part. It's hard to nail down a favorite part, but watching the kids grow up together and, you know, I'm in my 10th year right now. So some of the kids, you know, they came in and they were in kindergarten and now they're in high school. And that's like mind blowing to me. Just getting to watch them grow up and feeling like I'm part of their experience and seeing their friendships, and just, it's crazy.
It's so special. Yeah, I agree.
And we're going to jump to, you know, making that decision to open your studio. It sounds like that was your, you know, decision from the get-go that you weren't going to teach with someone else. You were going to move. You had your, you know, location picked out. And a lot of people are just so afraid to start. Mm-hmm. Like they either feel like they don't know enough, or they don't know what to do, or they're afraid to make a wrong decision or a mistake. Take us through what starting your studio looked like. Mm-hmm.
I definitely understand that. I do think it's like I benefited from maybe my personality traits are kind of, they led me in that way. And it wasn't as scary as it might be for some other people. But I basically, it's just so exciting for me to just be like, this is the McKeever School. I have my own logo. I have, I can make up my own steps. And like, I don't know, it was just exciting. And, you know, for a while, it's like, you're just growing it and you've got five students, but those are your students. And it's like, okay to start small. It's in, just don't compare yourself to everything, especially now that social media is like in our face all the time. It's like, just don't compare yourself, and you're going to make the school that you are meant to make. So even in my own journey, it's like, I had some successes in the beginning, and I, you always kind of put your own hopes and dreams into your students. And then there was a point where I'm like starting to realize, oh, not everybody wants the same thing as me. So like, not everybody wants to be a world champion, and that's okay. And so I'm going to train you correctly, but I need to let go, basically as a teacher, let go of your expectations of what your students will achieve, because it doesn't reflect you as much as we think it is. It's like, you're there to give the gift of dance, build a community, and yes, create a business for yourself, because it's hard work and you deserve to make money. So I think a lot of people need to think in that direction too. It's like, it's a business. So think like a business. Who's your client? It's actually the parents. You know what I mean? Be nice to them. What do they want for their children? A safe environment that's going to, you know, maybe their kid's not going to be in Riverdance. Most of them know that, and they just want their kid to have fun. So building your program in a way that's like sustainable for everybody, including yourself, and just taking the expectations that we all feel, okay, we have to achieve these goals. We're not good teachers if we don't hit these marks and have these stats. That's not really true. So if that's getting in your way of starting a business, then reevaluate and just find, you know, what can you offer your community? You're building an amazing thing by starting a school, you know?
Absolutely. And I think a lot of people are afraid of a lot of those different things that you mentioned, either afraid to fail or afraid that they will not be as successful as they think they need to be or should be. And I do think there's a little bit of that initial like, oh, you know, my students are a reflection of me and, you know, how good of a teacher that I am. Or, so it was really interesting to kind of hear you walk back through that process, because it's definitely something that I probably hit around like my third or fourth year was like, oh, okay, yeah, not everyone's going to move as quickly as I want them to, or, you know, they don't want it as badly as like we think that they should, or whatever it is. But how do you walk that line now of like, are most of your students competitive? Do a lot of them not compete? You know, how do you factor in like performance or extra things that maybe don't appeal to every single student?
Yeah. So honestly, a large amount of my school does not compete, and we offer a FESH, we host a FESH to introduce it. I don't think there's as big of a climate for competition out here as there is on the East Coast. So it's not as natural as like what I experienced growing up. You kind of have to like really kind of be like, this is competition. It's really cool. Go to the Aroctus. It's just down the street. Like, and because it will inspire people. Competition is awesome. It does get people to a high standard of dance. But it's not the be all and end all. And a lot of people don't want it, and that's okay. So honestly, maybe 30% of my school competes, and that's the thing. It's like, that's okay. I'd rather focus on those dancers and get them where they need to. And then I have dancers that have been with me since I started, and they've maybe competed twice at a FESH, and that they've been in my school for 10 years, and they show up every week, and they love it, but they're not going to, that's just not their thing, you know?
Yeah. Which I think is an important reminder that like, as teachers, we might want to steer people towards competition to try and get them to stay long-term, but it's not always like that.
Yeah.
If you have a great program and the right environment and a good community that they want to be around, they'll stay regardless of whatever their purpose or goal is.
Big time. Yeah. It's like, you know, you're missing out if you only offer one thing. So it's like, and then the shows are great. You know, they give kids just the same amount of, in my opinion, it's like, yeah, you're dealing with stress. You're dealing with thinking on your feet. You're dealing with like high standards and like goals. And so if someone's not into competition, you can still offer shows and get them continue to build their skills, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. It's getting the steps out of the studio into some other environment.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's great. And I know you have an adult program too, which I have a lot of adult dancers that listen to the show. Adult dancing is growing like crazy. Like,
yeah.
I got to sit down and watch the adult championship at Nationals this year, and it was like the highlight of my week, because having like the men and ladies combined and the different like expression and costumes, and it was like, and the joy on everyone's face was the most natural I think I've ever seen in one competition anywhere.
Mm-hmm. It's so
and,
cool.
Yeah, I'm curious whether that happened just organically for you, or if you wanted to teach adults from the get-go, or how that all happened.
You know, I've never thought of that, actually. That's a good question. I think my like second or third student was a dancer named Sherry, and she is still with us, like, aww, dancing. She won the trad set last year at the Aroctus, and she's doing the championships now. So it's like, I think it just came. I didn't know who would want the dancing. And most of the adults that I started out with are still with us and dancing every week. We have a nice program, and it's always fun teaching the adults, because you do see them. It's like they've got the friendships in the class, just like the kids, but it's got a different vibe to it. They just want to have fun and laugh, and they've got goals. They want to stay fit and healthy, and it's just nice to help people in that way. And I always kind of have to remind myself, you know, and I think teachers should always remind themselves, like, adults have chose to be there, and they have, a lot of them commute really far to get to your class. A lot of them are dealing with a lot of stress at home, and your class is like, they're like part of the week that gives them joy, and like how much you should cherish and like respect that, and the fact that you're doing that for somebody, and to not just throw that away, and to really understand who are those people in your class right now, and why did they decide to come. It's usually late at night and they're tired, and
they're adults with adult responsibilities.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I ended up teaching adults, like, it wasn't anything I ever really thought that hard about, because in our day, adults dancing, it wasn't really super popular. But I can totally see why people choose to either come back to dancing. Maybe they danced as a kid and they want to come back. Or I hear a lot, you know, people that wanted to dance as kids, but it wasn't accessible for one reason or another. You know, family couldn't pay for dance, or they didn't live near a studio and now they do. And or it's just something that they're really interested in and wanted to pick up as an adult. But I can totally see why people want a space and a hobby. And like, you know, we're all humans. We want friends and hobbies. And, you know, if you choose Irish dancing, so be it. But it is that like addicting factor of, you know, once you get in, you know, you want more, whether it's to be at class more often, or we have adult Kaylees. That was kind of our jump start. And then they're like, oh, well, I want to do more. I want to, you know, teach me the solo stuff. And I think the adults are going to be a really great, you know, I'm going back to my business brand, but I think adults are such a great revenue stream for studios because they are choosing to be there. And your customer is also, you know, the client. Whereas, you know, you're talking about before, the customer is the parent. You might interact with the children, but like really you're trying to appeal to the parent and then the child, you know, as a kind of like tangent of that. So adults are great like that. And I think they're the easiest customer to deal with.
Yeah.
Because they do, they're so busy with life and their obligations that like they come, they pay, they, you know, you interact with them personally and then they're off and, you know, do the rest of their week.
Mm-hmm. I agree. That is an interesting way to think of it. Like you're directly working with the customer in the studio.
Yeah. Which is just not always how it is with the kids. Mm-hmm. So, do you know roughly what percentage of your studio is like youth versus adult?
Let's see. We have two classes a week that are, I'd say we probably have maybe 30 adults in our program.
That's really incredible.
Yeah. So it's nice. It's a big deal. And, we did teams this year and had some solos and we can't wait to just keep growing it for people. And yeah, it's cool.
That's really nice. How early do you start teaching the kids?
We do like a tiny tot class. That's like 30 minutes. And, honestly, like that's such a nice way to just break dancers in and families into like, okay, we're just going to see what this is like. And you just jump around with the kids for 30 minutes. And when they're ready to like memorize a step, then they're ready for the, you know, the hour long class. And a lot of my dancers, I even forget this. It's like some of the champs, I'm like, oh yeah, you were a tiny tot. I forgot. So cute.
No, that's great. I mean, it sounds like you have a lot of like long time dancers at your school, which is really like the best.
Yeah.
And a testament to, you know, what you bring to their life every week.
Totally. And I feel like we should all of us trying to like promote Irish dance and like appeal to parents maybe looking for activities. It's like, this is unique that we are able to, you know, have this journey with a kid. You have the same teacher for a lifetime. So like,
that's so true. I've never thought about that, but yeah.
Yeah, it's like in other dance studios, I'm assuming you might have a bevy of different teachers and instructors and, you know, you graduate from one and move on to the other. But it's like, this is so unique that it becomes like family. And so, you know, we have to use that to our advantage.
Yeah, that's very true. Have you faced, I'm sure you have faced some, but if you want to talk about any specifically, you know, what challenges you faced either as your studio grew over time or just, you know, challenges that popped up that maybe you weren't expecting or weren't prepared for at the time and how you worked through those.
Yeah. I think what always comes to my mind is the word boundaries. So like as you're building something and when you're young and you're building things, it's like, and this was just a personal journey for me too. It's like learning boundaries and learning to spot moments and behaviors that aren't okay, whether it's with, you know, in a professional way, or if it's in the studio, if it's like, so just knowing like, okay, this is a red flag and maybe I need to set a boundary here and this will help me in the future. And just being okay with saying, you know what, this is how I'm going to run my studio in a polite way. I'm, you know, I don't really need people in the door, whatever the small behavior is that helps you set a tone that then just adds to less chaos in the future. Like just those kind of things, and thinking ahead and feeling okay, like you're the boss, this is your school. It's like, set those boundaries, because they actually, the small stuff does matter in the future. And
yeah. And my motto to myself is, what you allow will continue.
Yeah.
So like kind of hoping it'll go away, or like turning a blind eye never works.
No. And it's like, you can run yourself into the ground. The other part of advice is like, you can say no. So like, especially when you're starting your school, you're going to get hopefully like lots of emails of like, we want this, we need this, or do this show, do the, there, here's an opportunity here. And you feel like you, you know, in the beginning, do things for free a little bit, but at the end, there's going to be a point where you're going to get burnt out. Yep. So like just valuing yourself and saying, you don't need to say yes all the time. Pick what's right for you. Cause in the end, we all experienced this, you know, especially in COVID. It's like, if we're not there, the school most likely is closed.
Yep.
If our bodies aren't working, the school's not running. So take care of yourself and don't run yourself into the ground. Don't sacrifice your own health and well-being just to get the next goal, you know?
Yeah. And I know your sister teaches with you. How do you guys like split up the responsibilities?
For right now, it's like running really nice, but I think at some point we're going to figure out the next step. But right now we're both in the classroom at the same time, just because you do need two people. So it's nice to like, you know, in a mid-level class, a novice class, it's like you got a kid that just got into that level, yep, got someone that's almost a champ. You have to split, you know, at a certain point, it's like, you're on the side of this teacher, I'm running this step. So I don't really know how I would do it otherwise without another person in the room at this point. And we'll see how we divvy it up in the future, but that's kind of what we do.
Yeah. Do you both handle like the behind the scenes, the like non-teaching aspects together too?
She does help me a lot. I do most of the boring admin, but she's so organized. So she helps me every now and then. And then we run the FESH together and we run our showcase together. So that's like split down the middle. And then now she's making costumes.
Oh, amazing.
It's so cool. And
that's a special skill.
Yeah. And it's like amazing because our dancers can access like a custom outfit and it's affordable and it looks beautiful. So it's like, that's kind of the next thing. She'll be doing costumes.
That's great. Yeah. So what does a typical week look like for you these days?
So we teach Sunday through Thursday. Sundays and Mondays are pretty big. And usually our hours like on a weekday would be like, 4 to maybe almost 9 o'clock. And we do private lessons like here and there as well. So usually like from a 4 to 9 o'clock, 5 hours and 5 days a week. And then you add in all those private lessons.
Yep. Amazing. Do you have a lot of conflicts with Sunday feshes in your area, or mm-hmm. is your fesh pretty much like one of the only feshes in your area?
Yeah, we honestly, there's only like a fesh a month. So it's not as big as like where other schools would be like, oh, every weekend I'm feshing. Sorry, Sundays don't work. So it's every now and then, and the kid can do a makeup class or whatever. But yeah, out here in Northern California, it's like maybe one fesh a month if you're lucky. And so it's not too difficult.
Yeah, I would imagine. I always think about that. Like, Southern region just had their Aractas, and Western region is so expansive. Like, I always wonder how different things would be if it was like, oh, you know, come to the Aractas, but it's a plane ride away. Like, we're really lucky here in New England that everything is within like a 2-hour drive.
Exactly. It's such a different world. Cause I understand that's how I grew up too. It's like, yeah, California, very different.
Yeah. So, you also are an ADCRG now. Mm-hmm. You want to tell us a little bit about your experience with the exam? And this is my own personal curiosity, because yeah, I'm reaching that point where I'm like deciding, do I want to do it? Do I not want to do it? I'm a little intimidated, but I'm really interested in how you feel like it has or hasn't changed how you teach.
Yeah. I think I always tell people just go for it and then don't be afraid to ask friends. Like I had wonderful friendships, including like my friend John Grimes. He helped me a lot, like people that had passed the test and kind of gave me, you know, insights like, okay, train your brain, watch A Parade of Champions and give everyone comments and scores in within 16 bars. Like set yourself up to have to do more than the exam asks for and train yourself for like worst case scenarios and just like be able to do the job in the worst case scenario. And then that helped me a lot to just be like, okay, I'm going in and I'm able to do it in a short amount of time, get all these scores down, ding, 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 ding. What else? Just kind of understanding how the exam is run and what they're going to ask for and just kind of the logic behind how you would pass or fail. Like what is the reasoning? And a lot of it is like, we all grew up looking at our scores. We all know what judges have given us, what feedback we've been given. And so I just kind of took from there. And then it's like every day we're assessing dancers. Like our brains are doing this every day as teachers. So kind of know that you already have those skills as you go into the exam. And then just kind of like walking into the exam and saying, like you already have the job, you already have the skills. That really helped me as well.
Yeah, that's a good mindset trick. I like that.
Yeah, it's like you have the skills. We have the gut instinct. We know why we would give the winner this. And so to doubt yourself is the worst thing you could do in the exam.
Yeah, I've heard that's really like the make or break is, you know, are you solid in why you gave that score? Like, can you justify to someone else? Yeah. No, I thought they were the best because they did XYZ, or, you know, no, I had that dancer last because they did ABC.
Yeah. And it's like, if you stick to that and it's just like, don't renege on what your opinion was and you'll be fine. But yeah, don't hesitate to ask people for advice. And if you're going
down. Yeah, fortunately I have a lot of friends that recently passed, but yeah. Just going through the whole exam process again, just the study, all of that, I'm just like, oh man,
it's hard.
It's a lot,
but it little by little, just, you know, it's like you can do it. That's what you got to remember.
How did you find adjudicating the Kaylees after your, you know, TCRG experience to, you know, many years later taking it on the AD? Obviously it's different. You're not teaching it, but you're judging it. Like, I'm curious how you found that.
Yeah, the Kaylees, I love dancing them. I love teaching them. I don't like memorizing them. I just don't like, you know, but you need to know it. And it's just because that written test is so intense. But I think we all know what those Kaylees should look like. We've all sat in the hall and been watching them for a long time. Yep. And the thing that's interesting to me at this point in my career is there's way more nuances that I don't remember as a dancer. There's like so much room for interpretation.
Yeah.
That's what I'm like, that's art. That's cool. Yeah. That's what I'm studying myself, is like watching other schools and what they've done and kind of trying to learn even as the judge, being like, okay, that's interesting. And, you know.
Yeah. And like, how do I feel about that?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the little different stylish touches or embellishments, or yeah, where the book leaves a little bit of room. Uh-huh. And do you feel like it has made you a better teacher or a different kind of teacher? I'm sure like the eye for detail is just different now that you're sitting at the table.
It's like, as much as you know it in your head, getting dancers to do it is another thing. So yeah. It's like,
Don't we all know that?
Yeah. So it's like, as much as I'm like, okay, that flow in that moment, oh, that's so nice, I'm going to take that back to my studio. Well, that probably took that school 4 or 5 years, a decade to learn. Like, it's so just kind of, it's always a journey. It's, isn't it? It's like,
yeah,
if you get to the top, you're always, your expectations will always be challenged. You're always going to learn to grow in some capacity. It's like, it's interesting.
Yeah, that's a good reminder too, of just like, it takes a long time to see the fruits of your labor. And it's not one of those like fast rise to success type of things.
Yeah.
And just, you know, like you just said, like, oh, you know, you see something that like you as the teacher know how to do it or how to execute it, but getting other people to do it just takes a really long time, and just to stay the course and be patient, and yeah, it'll pay off eventually, just not always right away.
Yeah.
But yeah, I hope we get a chance to meet in person one day,
Definitely.
Because it's been really, really nice talking to you. Do you have any other little, you know, tidbits, pieces of advice, anything for the listeners before we sign off?
I think just if you're on any journey in any part of your dance career, just remember most of the people you look up to tried and failed and then tried again. And just don't let anyone tell you you can't get to your dream, right? So if you want to be in Riverdance, don't let anyone tell you you can't be, you know. And because that's kind of how my life turned out. It's like every step of the way, I just had to push through, try again. And I could not listen to anyone telling me that I couldn't do something.
I mean, that's a great quality for just life too.
Mm-hmm.
Not just, you know, for dance, you know, related things. And it's come up a lot with guests on the show of just that there isn't one, we have this imagination that there is like one ideal path, or there's one ideal time to start or order to do things in, but it's just not true. And yeah, like every guest that comes on just proves that wrong time and time again.
And it's so great to have these resources for dancers to hear these things. Like what you're doing is awesome. Cause
it's what I wish I had. So
I know, yeah.
I didn't have it, so I'm going to make it.
Yeah, it's great.
But yeah, thank you so much for your time. I will make sure that I leave the McKeever School website, Instagram, anything else you'd like, so that everyone can keep up with Nicole and her studio, and so that people can kind of follow your journey too.
Thank you so much. This has been so nice.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for coming on.
Bye. Hope to see you soon.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on TCRG to CEO Radio.